Morning. This is... who is it? It's VR Podcasting. And it's freezing. It's freezing out here today. Okay. Get the cane out. Off we go. Okay. I'm on one this morning. So that's the warning. I am on one. On the subject... Nothing like getting started straight away. Did I say I was? Yeah, Paul Hopkins, VR Podcasting. I'm on one this morning. I'm on one about Braille. my accent, yeah, gets in the way of that sometimes. It's interesting. About Braille. I've been I've always been an advocate of Braille, always. Unequivocally, I would say, this has been so. And I want to talk about it because other people are. And there is more of a groundswell than I thought. Even I had, to some extent, become a victim of the notion that is peddled all too often that Braille is dead. Braille is dead. Braille is dying. Braille is archaic. Braille is old-fashioned. Braille is not for modern people with a visual impairment. Blah, de blah, de blah. Can I say categorically that is utter rubbish in my opinion, and it has been peddled, and whoever is found to be responsible for peddling such nonsense needs a slap and to be put behind bars or something. It's not a good thing at all to be peddling that. Let's talk about this a little bit. And I'm challenging RNIB and Action, who are in the RNIB group, and others. It's not an attack at all. It's not going to be that. But it's a strong defence of people's right to learn Braille. And I don't mean giving 5-year-olds the choice as to whether they want to learn Braille or not, or even 10-year-olds. I mean, as part of your basic reading and writing, if you're visually impaired and you cannot read standard or enlarged print, and I'm talking about reasonable large print, then I think that really Braille has to be a serious and viable option. And as has been said very eloquently by two other people, Holly and Amy. Amy? Yeah. I think I've got that right. Yeah, I have. Who I'm in touch with and who have booed about this. As I said, very eloquently, young people. One of them is has learned Braille at school, which I had the honour and the privilege and the pleasure of doing. My school, and one of them is now teaching herself, who I put an absolute heartfelt congratulations to for doing that. but yeah, it's being pushed as this notion of like, oh, you don't need it, and actually, reading is not listening to audio. So, you know, the Right to Read campaign has had many, many successes, and I've been part of some of it. Helped to make a Right to Read film, and did some music for it, and things like that, in association with Look, which is a national charity that supports parents and with visually impaired children, and I was honoured to do that. It was a few years ago now. So yeah, RNIB have had some successes with the Right to Read campaign, but it should not, Braille shouldn't be behind any of that. Braille should be equal to it. And what I don't want on this is for people to come back and say, oh yes, well, we're doing this, and in 2010 we were still producing 500,000 pages. That's great, but I want to know what we're going to do, what we're going to do moving forward, so that the right to read isn't denied to those that could do with or could benefit from learning Braille. Because it's as I said, when you're listening to audio, you're listening, you're not reading so effectively. Effectively you're a lorry. Effectively you're illiterate, aren't you? Listening, reading, two very different things. And for those that have to do that and don't have a choice, I understand that. This is for people that could benefit from learning Braille. There are lots of surveys that suggest that people are more productive, and certainly, the people I talk to and know that have learned Braille as one of their main mediums, in terms of their main medium of actually reading, they are much more productive as people. I'm sure we could all quote and fire statistics at each other, but to me it's criminal that we currently live in an educational system where it's being suggested that, for example, someone wasn't disabled enough to go to a specialist school, or and I know they're individual debates and their individual circumstances, but it appears to me that there's a trend to be letting go of this vital, vital, vital medium of language. And it is a language, and it's amazing, it's unique because it's a tactile language. And I would argue that there's similar things with Moon. I know that Moon, even in things like United Kingdom Association of Alternate Formats, that Moon is an associated sort of part of that, really. It's not a fully fledged sort of part of it, I think, because Moon doesn't have the gravitas, and Moon again is another tactile language that people sometimes learn. I'm just getting this bus, hang on. Bear with. Can't pause it because Eleven. Yeah, cheers. Okay, Moon is another tactile language that is developed for people that might not be able to learn Braille. It's bulky, yeah, granted, as is Braille, granted. But, I was honoured and privileged to go to a specialist school where, we can criticise it, but in general, at least my basic educational needs were met. And I don't mean, I mean, like, I was able to sit exams and things like that, and I'm hearing, the dropout rate of people that are very capable is high in specialist schools, in mainstream schools where these specialisms aren't being taught. Who decides this, and on what basis? I don't know. Look, you can point me at individual cases, but it's a trend, and that is wrong. And the phraseology that says Braille is dead, Braille is dying, Braille is archaic. I've heard anecdotal evidence from, I'll put my cards on the table if I haven't already. I work and I produce Braille, large print and audio information for a living. That isn't why I'm here. There is enough work, and there's enough potential work for all of us that supply. So, I'm not bothered about that. That's not where I'm going here at all. It's not in our business. It's not the same competition rules, because many people, many transcribers and companies employ visually impaired people. So, it's not in my best interest to get one over on another provider. I would never do that. because, as I said, we're all doing similar things, and it's a bit more loosely based on the sort of social enterprise model. So ours is a social enterprise. That's an important aside. I don't have that axe to grind. I really don't. My axe is purely about the fact that Braille is being lost, and I think educational opportunities are being lost. And I know many parents, so they're my friends that have children with visual impairments, and they've had to really fight and struggle to get any kind of meaningful education for their sons and daughters. And I think that anyone that's peddling these notions has to take personal responsibility. You know, RNIB, Action, many others. I'm not just picking on them. Any charity, any representative body, they're not objects. They're filled with people that form and shape policies and that have opinions. And that get their way in on voting boards and all the rest of it. And I think that's the key, isn't it? I mean, RNIB it's not an object. It's a living thing, because it's made up of people that are part of that sail in that particular ship. So I think I'm asking for a concerted effort and a response while it's not too late. That Braille, particularly, this is my bag to this morning, is given the due consideration and attention that it deserves. And we don't just say, well, we are still producing some, so that's okay. You know, and for you Brailleists, you know, go to your restaurants you know, to hotels, to cafes, to schools, to wherever you are, and say, no, I would like this in, and give them a number. It doesn't have to be my number. I'm not going to sit here and quote, you know, where I work and say, you know, you all know where I work, so I'm not going to go and quote the number and say you got to use us. I'm not, that isn't my bag really. But find someone that you know, maybe do some research and say, well, okay, this charity that I like the look of supports, produces Braille, large printing audio. So might be a local charity even. You know, I'm not, there isn't a political thing here for me in that sense. You know, I'm honoured to do my job. I really am, to influence corporates and chief execs and CEOs of companies and organisations to really take this seriously in terms of their provision to their customers is a privilege. It's not just a job, it's a way of life. It really is for me. And, you know, I don't need to evidence that, but believe me, it is. And I think that we just need to get together a bit more on this, I think. And that's my plea. It might be going totally over the heads of people listening to this, but the right to accessible information, and in this particular instance talking about the right to read, the right to be literate, you know, reading, writing and arithmetic was always the saying, wasn't it? You know, reading, Braille learning and arithmetic then. So it comes with it. You can't do those things very easily without Braille if you need it. So there you go. Oh, and maybe the conversation is quite apt because English Braille, as in the English language, is becoming united. So it was the case that different English-speaking countries would all have different Braille codes. This is changing. So we're on the cusp of something very, very exciting. Yes, there will be Braille snobs or Braille, oh, I don't know, I shouldn't say snobs, but you know, most of them I spoke to are, that say that, well, we can't change to United English Braille, because that's what it's called, because it means that people are going to have to learn something different. Well, no, sorry. You know, we used to sing How Great Thou Art instead of, you know, How Great You Are or whatever in hymns. You know, hymn books have changed. They represent, old hymn books represent a change in the English language.
don't they? You know, we don't all talk Shakespearean anymore. Times change. Braille needed to change. It's going to be easier to share Braille information. So once it's produced, it will be understood by everybody that reads the English language. So, you know, I think, I know I could present many other arguments for it, and I will be going to learn more about it in November with UCAF. So, you know, it's getting easier to access Braille universally in terms of the English language. And there are other countries that are way ahead of us on this. You know, we were brilliant. You know, I was taught Braille. There was no question that I would be taught Braille back in the day, you know, when I was at school in the, well, sort of early 80s. Well, I started school in the 70s, but you know what I mean? When I was old enough to be learning Braille. So my point, yeah, was that it's getting easier than ever to at least have a universal approach so we'll be able to share, you know, American libraries, and all the old Braille won't go away overnight. I mean, there's still books that are 40, 50, 60, 70 years old, you know. You know, if you want to continue to read those, you'll be able to, but I think most of us can make the transition, to be honest, and it'll be a worthwhile one. So anyway, I have ranted for a good while. Not ranted, I hope, but spoken semi-eloquently about this subject. I say I think other people have done it justice too, but that's my challenge. Let's not let Braille die. Let's make a concerted effort and join forces where necessary and partner and all those exciting buzzwords that are important, as long as they're being done in the true spirit of what that means. So none of us are trying to become Radio Pauls or Radio RNIBs or Radio whatever about it. We partner, we seek opinion, and we seek direction and agree a way forward. And that's what I'd like to see. It's Christmas, nearly. I can have a wish, I think. So there you go. Thank you for listening, and make of it what you will. Comment if you like. You know how to find me. Twitter, Audioboo, whatever, with VI Podcasting. I'll speak to you soon. Thanks for your time. Bye.